Well, one, putting on, you know, the cyber hat, just for a second, is an agent is the mother of all insider threats, right? Right? For the reasons you stated. Yeah. They don't sleep. They move fast. Okay. So you may have a permission structure as an example for a human, knowing that, oh, Evan, you know, is probably not going to drill all the way down to the, you know, and if he does, we'll flag it. Okay. Now this agent, if they get the right prompt or the right motivation, they could get there in a second, right? They could, so they will be able to see everything that you enable them to see and more. So we are already seeing basic prompt injections being used on agents run internally. And that is, so you got to instrument the heck out of them, not just trust your perimeter defenses. And you know, that's where a solution like Deep Tempo does come in.
This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocki. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curve.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled, and I'm pleased to have a guest this time. Ivan is going to join us and tell us a little bit about his story, about the company, and we will talk about some of the topics that might be slightly different than other topics we discussed. It's not about necessarily, you know, the exact five topics we discussed in the last five episodes. That's the beauty of this a SaaS Scaled podcast, to be practical and talk to SaaS leaders and cover a variety of topics as the real business and the real life is. Ivan, welcome to the show, and please tell us a little bit about yourself and the company, please.
Hey, thanks for having me, Armon, and it's I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I'm a many-time founder, so I must have, I don't know, memory problems because I keep doing it again. And again, and again, all of them have resulted in exits, which has been great. All serving enterprises, all software companies, 100% software. And I'm doing it again. I look forward to talking to you about that and how we're working with Snowflake, who's a major investor of ours, but other SaaS serving companies as well here at Deep Tempo.
Can you tell us a little bit about how did you start this company? How did you come up with the idea? What made you think that this is the need that I want to focus? Obviously, it would be some years of dedication from, you know, your perspective. Right. So what was the story behind the start?
Yeah, it's the more I do these, the more I recognize that evaluation is all important, you know, up front, because it is years. And so in this case, I had sold the last company. I was there deciding what to do next. You know, my LP slash wife suggested, you know, retirement. She didn't want me around doing that quite yet. And I went back to school. I took some grad level comp sci courses at Stanford with the express purpose of trying to get ahead of what was coming, which was obviously AI. I didn't know it was coming to this extent there a few years ago. And what I saw both really encouraged me and scared the heck out of me. So I saw the tremendous power of AI, but it didn't take long to then wonder, well, what if someone with less altruistic motives uses this to attack us as software and SaaS builders? What would happen then? So long story short, decided to use AI to protect us from AI-powered attacks, and And, you know, now it's really starting to pay off. But that's really what I saw was a potential concern, but also a potential opportunity.
Fantastic. No, that makes perfect sense. And to be honest with you, with, you know, the next 10, 20 years with, I would say, boosting the intelligence level of the software and technologies that are going to be super smart. And also, I'm not sure at one point, hopefully, we have heard a lot about quantum and some other technologies that can boost even the processing power. But just imagine if you have all of these cloud technologies and quantum technologies, and you have all of these, you know, AI and the, you know, the I would say the super intelligence plus super processing power. Well, all of these sound positive, but on the minus side and the risk part, not just the reward part, on the risk part, then what do you want to do with the security? I mean, the encryption that looks very kind of like a very Chinese wall today and not easy to break. If you add 1 million times more intelligence behind it and processing power, it's not really that great anymore, right? So definitely there are so many things that we have to think ahead of the time and just say 10, 20 years from now, what is going to happen. Even today, as you said, AI is growing very fast, is advancing very fast. Then you will see a lot of challenges that now your kind of protection needs to be more advanced as well. Now, if I'm a SaaS company and I have my data and I have my clients' data and I'm running on a Snowflake, Databricks, you know, those kind of platforms, what do you see as a kind of on both sides, what do you see the problems that I wouldn't have experienced before AI that now I experience? And also, how do you see I can really go and fight with those and protect myself and my customers' data against it? And these are the new things we can do, again, taking advantage of AI that we couldn't do before. On both sides, if you could educate us, that would be great.
Sure. Today, what we're seeing is that Anthropic has talked about this, OpenAI's Gemini from Google. They've all issued these reports saying that even their models, which they do a lot to protect from being used by malicious actors, even their models are still being used by malicious actors. So you can imagine open source models, which are maybe a generation behind the top ones, but have no guardrails on them in the same way, are being used. And you see that in the data. And so one of the issues in cybersecurity often is that we find ourselves talking about FUD, you know, and the fear of the situation. It's a little bit like, you know, your lawyer always saying, like, call us before you get into trouble. Don't quit it, right? And so there is a little bit of that, but you ask the question, and I think it's right to be nervous. So we now have these technologies, again, look at the Anthropic reports, et cetera, that enable, first and foremost, an attacker to be 100 times more productive, right? So what used to take a whole battalion or what have you, you know, 40 pretty good attackers working together to get into an environment may now take one attacker. And to be more concrete, Anthropic reported on basically one threat actor successfully getting into 30 enterprises. So not small companies, you know, like Deep Tempo, but well-protected companies running very long duration campaigns, including novel attacks. Not always, but often attacks that our existing detections in cybersecurity really have a hard time seeing. Today, your cybersecurity firewalls, your SIM, the thing, you know, looking over what's happening in your environment, they're using signatures. If they see this pattern, that must be bad. Well, now attackers are not just more productive, they're also doing things in novel ways. They're not even flagging a lot of these detections. So that's the state of the world. You're seeing it reflected in data, right? There's just many more attacks, especially novel attacks hitting. CrowdStrike last year talked about 70 in their 2025 report, I think it's 78-79% of attacks being novel in nature, not using a known piece of malware. So what can we do about that? Well, let's fight fire with fire at some level. So let's use AI. There's a lot of hype and usage of these same models to then look at events that occur that might be concerning, and then to figure out if they are concerning and to respond to those. But that begs the question, can we even see the attack in the first place? So that's where a company like Deep Tempo comes in. We built a model from the ground up that's, you know, tiny compared to the massive trillion parameter models, but is massively more powerful than the old rules-based detections. And we run it on, you can try it on Snowflake today. It's a native app, right? You can try it out. We have users like Snowflake. We came through Bank of New York, et cetera. And they're using us to especially find attacks that otherwise might slip beneath your detections, right? Low and slow, very patient attacks that, again, would take a lot of humans in the past. Now, Claude or DeepSeek can help you do that, right? So we can find not all of those attacks, but we can find them better than we think anything else out there. So, yeah, fighting fire with AI. In our particular case, we're focused on the detection side, but there's also a lot of AI being used for the response side as well.
There are companies that, traditionally the way software works, right? So they write software, they write code, their mm-hmm. algorithms are doing what they are supposed to do. There are some other companies, they are purely AI, their job is to build a model. And what they do, they're not really writing software, they're trying to create a trained model, and that model that is highly trained can take care of the job, and then over time, it can get better and better. And the more data comes in with some fine tuning, the training gets better. The value is really the model, is not the software or the algorithm. And many companies do both. It's a hybrid model, so the value comes from both sides. You have some AI functionalities and using the model, and your model is getting better, but also you are writing software doing the algorithm. In your case, in your company, which category you belong to?
Well, Deep Tempo, our roots are very much in the model. And our early users have very much been organizations that, if you think about it, they have a lot of the software around it. I mean, they're spending, we're in one engagement where the user spends, you know, more than $1 billion on cybersecurity annually, right? So we're not going in and saying replace all those things. We're saying here's a spotlight on this class of attack, and that's mostly the model. But what we're doing day to day, of course, is writing software around it to kind of broaden usage and to make it easier and easier to use. But probably it's a great distinction. Probably most of our value, certainly to our users today, is the algorithm or, you know, the high dimensional model that we've built.
Great. Now let's back up a little bit and talk about, in general, the big picture of the software industry as we are today. There are many discussions, as you know, happening during the last couple of weeks, especially starting early February, with the new version of Anthropic, and then all of these kind of, you know, discussions in the market that talks about really software is going to get easier and easier to write, and having a software company is going to be cheaper because you need less people, and less people can generate more sophisticated code because AI is going to help them at almost no cost or minimum cost. And because of that, then there will be more software, more sophisticated software applications out there and faster coming to market, adding more value. And that means that we are starting in a new era of software businesses, that they have to add more value. They need to be more comprehensive or in depth to add that value. And probably we will see not mega software companies and not that high price of the software as we had before. How do you see that in your view, and as you are thinking about your go-to-market strategy, and you are thinking about other software companies, some of them listening to us, and then what would you say? How do you see it yourself?
Right. It's an enormous change. And many have been talking about it. I think that the context layer, which again, there's a went somewhat viral, Foundation Capital talked about it in December. But context layer, however you describe it, which would be more than a system of record, but it's also a system of behavior, tracking the behavior of your agents or of an enterprise's agents. You know, that layer, which may not be a layer, may be a bunch of silos. You know, maybe there is no such layer today, but that layer clearly seems to be a strategic spot, right, in the enterprise. And we tend to work with very large enterprise, large NVIDIA, you know, who have bought an AI factory or a bunch of GPUs, right? And those, so they're very, we see investments being made on, my point being, pulling maybe out of traditional vertical SaaS, pulling a lot of the data, but then also a lot of the activity tracking out of those traditional systems of record. And that, as much as what you mentioned, maybe as much as, or maybe it's just another aspect of these changes. So yes, I mean, we say within Deep Tempo, you know, we could have a meeting, but in the time we have the meeting, why don't we just code it? Right? I mean, you know, you can move that fast now, and we're seeing proliferation of bespoke, homegrown software in enterprises. So that's happening. But I'm very attuned to the lower level, having worked in data most of my career. I think this lower level and the context layer is really where the action is at. I think Snowflake's well positioned, but it's not trivial. I mean, it's, there's more there, you know, how do you instrument these agents, right? And that whole observability piece as well is huge. So that I think changes everything. And so you're going to increasingly probably see, under this hypothesis and scenario, you're going to see, great, so you have Claude skills, you know, that you've developed that help an agent do X or Y really well. But what's that business model if a lot of the value is actually down at that lower level, and arguably some other agent could come along and use that data, use that history of behavior, and get smarter faster? So that's a really interesting axis as well.
Yeah, from another aspect, so far, we only had humans for most part using our software. It doesn't matter which software company we are, if I'm a CRM provider or I'm a HR management system provider or LMS, doesn't matter. I had to cater only to humans. And all of a sudden, now I see these, you know, aliens coming, you know, AI agents coming, and then they wanted to use my software. So I have a new category of users, the same way that if you were driving on street 5 years ago, majority of the cities, even in the US, there was no autonomous car. Today, this morning, I just noticed that there is a Zoox behind me, there is a Waymo at the right, another Waymo on the other side I could see, and my car is driving itself as a Tesla as well. And then all of us are autonomous cars, and we are not still the majority, but I would say at this rate, probably in Austin, I would see that probably 2 years from now, autonomous cars may be very much everywhere you go, you will see, you know, if not 50%, very, you know, a good percentage of the cars around you, at least in the city, will be autonomous. The same way that AI agents today may not count as majority of your users, but maybe next year, maybe 2 years, maybe 5 years from now, then you look and see how many users you have, and majority of users are not humans anymore. These AI agents coming, asking for something, getting something done. So the applications have to get ready for catering to way more number of users, because those agents are going to be much faster. The digital workers are not sleeping, they are not stopping, they are not slowing down, they are not getting tired, they will be faster. And all of a sudden now, your SaaS application is catering now to much more requests, you know, many, many more requests than used to.
Yep.
Does it change the pricing? How do you see the impacts of this?
Well, one, putting on, you know, the cyber hat just for a second, is an agent is the mother of all insider threats, right? Right? For the reasons you stated, they don't sleep, they move fast. Okay. So you may have a permission structure as an example for a human, knowing that, oh, Evan, you know, is probably not going to drill all the way down to the, you know, and if he does, we'll flag it. Okay. Now this agent, if they get the right prompt or the right motivation, they could get there in a second, right? They could, so they will be able to see everything that you enable them to see and more. So we are already seeing basic prompt injections being used on agents run internally. And that is, so you got to instrument the heck out of them, not just trust your perimeter defenses. And you know, that's where a solution like Deep Tempo does come in. But I gave this talk at MIT for AI, for executives on AI, I guess, a few weeks ago. And one thing we were really, really drilling into is exactly this, like the non-human identities and agentic users of the underlying data. You know, how is that going to change even how you organize, how you manage yourself, right? So are we all going to be expected to be like Jensen and have 47 direct reports or more, right? Because you can, right? Apparently. So, you know, the human factor of this is going to be really interesting when, you know, maybe 100 or 1,000 times more work is being done by agents than, let's say, the managerial folks. How is that going to even be organized? And incidentally, those are opportunities, right? Those are huge opportunities for other classes of SaaS or agentic software. It's like agents watching agents, right? Which at some level is what we're doing on security. But, you know, productivity, focus, are they actually doing what you need? All of these sorts of things, you know, I don't know, making sure the cloud skills are checked in correctly to your internal GitHub and, you know, managing all of that. And so so it's fascinating. But those are a couple of angles for sure. Like, what are we expected to manage now? How are we going to do that? What tools are we going to use to do all of that? It's pretty interesting. It really is.
Yeah,
and then for us, just incidentally, like we have to be headless. I mean, we're headless, right? Now, we do have a UX, and it's back to my old open source days. It's, you know, we have charts to sell to the VPs. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, a human still today is writing the check. So we have to help, and humans think in, you know, high visually a lot, right? They grok something. So we have to draw pretty pictures. We have to. The vast majority of our value in a fairly mature environment is all headless. It's you know, it could be agents, it could be your existing Splunk using our data. That's really our mode already.
Yeah, and it seems like the expectation of users and customers, people who are using the software in many different, you know, again, domains, any SaaS application they are using, it's going to be very different, right? So the expectation today is more, hey, I just need to, my employees or my users or my partners use this software this way. And the expectation will be extremely different maybe 2 years from now. We are talking about even a year from now, it might be totally different. The expectation also on the price that it has or how to utilize it or how to pay it and the licensing model will change as well. So many changes will be... Yeah,
just on that, I'm somewhat echoing what, you know, A16Z has said about it. So I don't know, but it makes a certain amount of sense. If you see Harvey or Logoria, the, you know, in legal AI, but, you know, this notion of pricing and you saw the sort of earlier generation of automation companies attempting to do this, but pricing on outcomes. This is a job. I do a job for you, as opposed to, you know, how many logs do I ingest or, you know, whatever the case may be, as opposed to an activity metric or a CPU metric, pick your licensing scheme or seats metric. It's more like outcomes. And I'm doing work for you. So that's fascinating as well. I just think, you know, when you get to a certain point, yeah, again, if the intelligence or let's say the footprints are in a context layer, which they probably should be, Then what is your lock-in, if you will? What is your sustainable advantage if you have devised a particular set of agents? I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see how much pricing power folks have over time. But right now, some of the fastest growing software, the fastest growing software companies of all time, as we know, are the cursors of the world, right? And they are using tokens, et cetera. But we're also seeing folks move to this sell by outcome approach. And that could be really interesting as well. Then you just have to run like heck to stay ahead of Claude Code, right? And things that are vibe codable, Claude coded Claude Code, right? In like 2 weeks. So where's the IP there? I mean, pretty clearly it's in Claude, right? It's tricky, but fascinating. But again, if you imagine a world in which there's 100,000 of these, I don't know the number, at a decent sized enterprise, I mean, maybe many, many more than that, you're still responsible, right? You're still a company, right? So how do you actually control these? How do you make sure they're not the insider threat of all insider threats, you know, that they're not deciding to sell your data to their friends, other agents, or, you know, to be kind of funny about it. How do you plan? How do you deliver results to Wall Street in a deterministic fashion when you're dealing with tens or hundreds of thousands of these agents doing their jobs? There's opportunity there, I think, as well.
Yeah, I used this metaphor for someone that let's think about software product companies as restaurants. And okay. Let's say they have a new technology now that the food can be available to you on your mobile phone. You just type whatever food you want, you prompt it, mm-hmm. and then the food comes to you. This machine can build any, make any food you want. And you don't have to really just worry about just, you know, making the food, having the best chef on earth. Mm-hmm. Let's just imagine for a second that that's... It's still the restaurant business is not going to go away, and still the challenges of having a restaurant is going to be there. And still you have to really take care of a lot of other things in order for your restaurant to stay relevant and popular. You know, it's not going to be only because the food part is, the coding part of the software is part of the software company business, but it's not everything. Still, you need to work with other companies to make them successful. You still need to have a good success team. You still need to, you know, have a good execution in place. Still, you need to balance everything to, you know, to get there in a reliable way, to manage customers. So my point is that, you know, why we, you know, understand that some part of this having the running the software business is going to accelerate and it's going to get better, easier, faster, but the overall running a successful software business requires more than just, you know, now I have a better way, a faster way to generate code. So that might be the future with maybe raising the bar, maybe at least if you are talking about the next some years, I would say, you know, yes, even if you are more productive and you can use your some tools to advance your technology, but at the same time, the bar is moving higher and you have to deliver more. So at the end of the day, it's the same challenge. It's not like nobody expects a better software and you can't just deliver the software you could deliver 2 days ago, 2 years ago now faster. So your job is easier. Mm-hmm. I think as software guys, you know, we have to, you know, there are changes on both sides.
Yes. So a lot of it comes down to, and this is me putting an econ hat on a little bit, but you know, if you had APIs that had perfect information about what the efficacy of what's on the other side, then your very boundaries of a firm would change, right? Because, I mean, one of the best papers, most readable papers as well ever in econ is Theory of a Firm by Coase, right? I think he was an undergrad and he asked the question, hey, we're supposed to have perfect competition, right? That's what we're taught. At least theoretically in capitalism, what's this firm thing? Why do we even have firms? And the answer, I mean, I'm simplifying, of course, is more or less transaction costs, right? So I really don't know how good my team is going to be, you know, and so I can't like at each time say, hey, will you go talk to this customer? Here's 17 cents. You know, will you go? I can't do that. So we have to be together as a team, because otherwise the contracting costs outweigh even the value of what I'm buying. But imagine a world in which, you know, there's a billion agents who've put their shingle up. If you have good information about how they're performing, maybe you just use them on a per drip basis, like we use Claude. If that's true, you know, that changes things. I don't know that it is going to be true, Armand, to your point. I think folks still, check writers, tend to be humans. We want to know who are we trusting. And, you know, my biggest moment when I'm selling or, you know, partnering with a customer, but selling, is when I can look them in the eye and say, I'm all in on your success, period. That's it. Whatever it takes, here's my call me anytime, done. I don't know that an agent is going to be able to give that warm and fuzzy to somebody writing seven-figure checks. So there's still that. But it's interesting to think about. Maybe there are whole pieces of what we do that not only can be identified or done by agents, but maybe done by public agents, you know, maybe done by an enhanced Claude or whatever the case may be. So it's a fascinating time. It really is.
I have a random question for you, a fun one.
Good.
And I wanted to know, out of all of the cities that you have been, you know, there yourself and you have experience,
cities.
If you wanted to, cities, locations, places in the world, which one would you recommend, Armand, if you had 2 weeks, doesn't matter, summertime, wintertime, fall, whatever you decide, this is the best time for this place, go and visit the place. Wow. I love traveling, and I would love to know what is the city that you would recommend?
Well, I would have the same question. I also love traveling. I mean, for me, it's I was blown away when I first went to Hong Kong. I mean, Hong Kong, as you probably know, is incredibly diverse, very vertical, you know, green and ancient and modern all at the same time. So Hong Kong, of course. So yeah, these are monster city. I mean, Tokyo in its own way, you know, you're watching the, I don't know, bullet train come into Ginza Station and like it's going through a building. Like, what are we doing here? This is very Blade Runner feeling. And, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood, that city is just so complex. And you could study, I mean, I truly believe Japan, but definitely Tokyo. You could study your whole life and still be somewhat of a stranger, right? There's so much there. But yeah, I'm flying to New York on this weekend, and you know, New York's New York, you know, it's incredible. So yeah, it's an old reliable. It's always going to shock you, have weird stuff, interesting stuff. But that's a great question. We have friends, you know, out of near Lagos, right? Nigeria. And I want to go there. The talent pool there is mind-blowing, right? There's a lot of great engineers coming out of Nigeria. So that's definitely an area I want to go to as well. But I haven't been. I'm not recommending. I'm just saying it's on the bucket list. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. And my last question for you is about a book that you have read, either personally you liked it or professionally, and or you may say a blog that you follow, whatever, but something that for reading for the audience that you would recommend.
Sure. Well, may not be that original, but I'll just say attention is all you need. If you haven't read it, you know, what are we doing here? Because it is the paper that set off what we're living in today. And when you read it, you'll see this paper was the authors of the paper, who were mostly Googlers. They're just trying to do better translations, which in and of itself is a good thing. But in so doing, they unlocked what has become AI today. So this encoder, decoder, transformer architecture, just, yeah, I mean, it's 8 pages, maybe more than that. But you can grab it or just drop it into Grok or Claude and get it to talk to you about it. But just on understanding what is self-attention. what are transformers? This is like the transistor of our age, or maybe even more so. It's the fundamental building block of AI, just understanding it to the extent possible and the sheer potential power of those architectures. I don't know. It helps me sleep at night, at least feel like my crystal ball is not fully fuzzy, because at least I grok and have tried to work hands on with those building blocks. So yeah, attention is all you need is a great one. 5 years now, something like that. 6 years old, I think.
Fantastic recommendation. I appreciate it, Ivan, and thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Yep, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.